Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the photo show. It's the same three of us are here again. We've been doing this for a few weeks now, and I think we're getting a bit better at doing it, and I hope the shows are enjoyable and you're watching through. We'd love to get some comments back, you know, even if they're bad ones. If they're useful and helpful and make us improve, then by all means send them through. But we'd like to know what you think about the show, how it's going, and anything that you'd like us to discuss or bring up or mention. So please send them through. Send them through to on the BTN line, or even to me on my email address, which we'll put up at the end of the show. So tonight we have the usual experts. I have Ian and I have Damien. Good evening, guys.
Hi.
Evening.
How you all been? Have you been out to get some good photographs in the last few weeks?
Yes, this weekend. I mean, I've just posted flowers in the garden, really. I enjoy the occasional flower pictures, so I was painting the deck and staining it, and so the flowers came into view, and yeah, that was the weekend of photography.
Great. And you were also away as well. We saw some lovely shots. You were away in Greek islands, weren't you?
Yes, Greek island, very photogenic, very photogenic.
Yeah.
Really good, especially at the beginning of the day, at the end of the day. Really lovely.
Okay. Yeah, the blues and the whites is just it's a great combination. Yeah.
Yes.
Ian, what have you been up to? Anything decent that you can show us?
Nothing I can show you.
he always says that, and then just
I've started a bit of a time lapse project, but it's going to take a few months to put it together.
So,
you need to lurk on his. You need to lurk on his Instagram because he sometimes pops up with doing when you least expect it.
Yeah, I need to keep going back to the same place. I'm doing, you know, different compositions there, different light, different tides, and then I'm going to try and put it together in one video as a time lapse. So it's going to take a few months.
Good, but maybe when you do that, you could also then show us the actual nuts and bolts of how you go about achieving that. And Damien, lurking around on Instagram is not something a man of my age should be doing. I don't think so. I could be getting myself into a lot of problems if I did that.
Okay. Sorry.
So let's have a look at news items. So news this week, we were looking at the National Geographic were announcing their prize photography photographs. So I thought we'd have a quick look at that. So this is you can see this is the National Geographic page, and the winners of the Traveller Photography competition have been announced. And the lead one there is a rather aggressive looking young man. And I'm just glad he's wearing shorts, pants even. It's a pretty aggressive photograph, isn't it?
It's one that grows on you. I initially looked, and then as I stared at it, the central bit, it's quite, you know, it doesn't do the rule of thirds or anything like that. The person's right in front of you. It is a low down shot. Also got the background in as well. Quite an impressive background. And the person's not looking at the camera either. He's looking away. So you're thinking what he's looking at. And you're really sort of looking into the scene. It's a really impressive shot. I really like it.
Yeah, he seems to have caught the correct moment there, yeah. The next one we want to look at, and I think this was my favourite, was the nature one, which is that a manta ray, Ian?
I thought it was a stingray or something.
Stingray, is it?
Yeah.
But it's, to me, it looks like it's flying. It's off into space. It's just...
Yeah. But imagine a really low light shot, really in the dark depths of the sea. That's what I conjure up when I see it.
Yeah, and it looks great. Do you think he's lit that? Because the spots on the ray seem to stand out. Would that be a flash of any kind? Do you think?
No, it looks too subtle for flash. I'd say. It's just I think it's beautifully done.
Yeah.
I mean, going back to the first one, I think the success of the winning image is that the strong character in the centre, but that's only part of the story. I think, you look at all these individual characters in the background, and there's a whole story going on. If it was just that one person, it wouldn't be a very strong image. But all these, mm-hmm. The guy in the background with his arms in the air, the guy on the right hand side of the frame, really, vocal with his mouth open, and the other guy behind him looking at that guy, and there's just, you see all of these little things as you look at it, and then you've almost got this younger boy who I assume it's a boy, who's actually looking away, but it almost, he's looking away as if he's looking at the other people to see, actually, am I doing what I should be doing?
That's what I
read from the image.
Yeah.
And then with it being a National Geographic traveler, I think then to have this, because this guy could be doing a hacker anywhere, but then you've got this wonderful landscape behind. You're placing him in that landscape. It's a storytelling sort of image. And
the one thing I noticed was, if you look to the right of the guy's knee, there's someone in the back there with red shorts thinking, hands on hips. Well, I'm not much impressed with this, is
it?
great photograph. The other one in the landscapes we looked at, this one here, the Indra
mountain range.
Yeah. But again, it's not the most stunning I've seen. We've been looking at other competitions while we're doing the show, and it's okay, but I'm not totally knocked out by it.
I think what's good about it is the layers. There's one layer of mountains, then you look beyond, there's another layer, then there's another layer. So it's quite a clever picture, because it's layered on the landscape in several planes. So it's good in that respect. It's very good. But it's not as attention grabbing. Once you've seen the other ones, you tend to be let down by that one. But if you just had that one to look by itself, then maybe different.
And what lets that one down is there's the same light is hitting across most of the scene, apart from a little bit of shadow in the foreground. You've got the same light on that, looks like a village or something in the bottom right third.
Yeah.
Got the same light on the mountains immediately behind, and then you've got a very similar light on the far mountain. So all of a sudden it becomes a very flat image. So if you had a range of different light, you'd create more segregation. Obviously, the photographer can't control that, but yeah.
Yeah, it does look, I said, I think if that's the best of all the landscape the ones I had, then I don't think that much I had. The other ones couldn't have been that good, so I think. The last one was the one we all thought was just stupendous, this cityscape one. Which is just, I love it. It's, I could have that as a picture on the wall. That's just so bright.
It's like a color checker. It's like a color checker thing. You could actually check your colors of your camera with that one.
A color test. But yeah, and as it was Ian who pointed out, I didn't even see the one person in the shot, in that middle view there.
They say the human eye is drawn to it, and I was immediately drawn to her, even when it was a thumbnail before I clicked on it. And that's what makes the image. You take that figure out, and it's a nice image, good, but I think it just elevates it. And she, it looks like a she or he, they're walking into the frame as well, into the space. They're not walking out of it, which adds to it. And they've been very carefully placed. They've got a bluish top, and they've been placed right slap bang in the middle of a yellow doorway. So you've got those two opposing colours, yellow and blue. So it's more clever than just hold the camera up and snap. There's a bit of thought process gone into it.
That's why you're the expert and I'm not. You see,
I wouldn't say that. I can critique it, but I can't take it.
we all try, don't we? We all try. Yeah. So go and have a look at them. They're some really good stuff there. Moving on, the other item we were discussing again, it's not a news item as such, but we've just taken by it, was this drone flight through. Is it St. Michael's Mount? Is that what they call it?
No, it's St. Michael,
Mont-Saint-Pierre,
in France, isn't it?
Yeah. So we went onto the site. Here's a picture of it, and again I'll put the link in later on. But it's worth watching the videos as it goes through.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
I mean it's only 2 minutes, but it's been well. I mean, there's moments where the drone's going into this dark passageway, and they use that as a transition into the next scene. And the piloting is just phenomenal, because I felt like I was almost on a roller coaster, because you were sort of swinging and almost when it went down one of the passageways, I was like, it's going to hit the frame, I need to duck.
Yeah.
It was just phenomenal. And I'm guessing you don't see any people or anything in the scenes. I'm guessing the person had special permission to fly,
permission to do that.
But very beautifully done, and it looked like done probably over a period of time, because there was one shot I think looked like high tide, another shot where it looked like low tide. And the other thing I could never spot the actual pilot anywhere. Sure, he's there somewhere, but it's been well done where you don't see, sometimes you see drone footage and you see a little figure on the floor with a joystick. I couldn't see that at all.
Do you think that might have been sponsored by GoPro?
It was picked as a winner, so I don't know.
Winner, yeah.
I don't know.
It's the GoPro Awards, so it was what they chose rather than that was sent into them. But it'd be interesting, because we talked about GoPro being in trouble. They're still trying to keep up, and they're what was it? Maybe what 6 or 7 years ago they had that niche market for daredevil sports equipment. We're all going to learn to ski like fans clamor and take all these fantastic videos with under the pole. I can't even stand up on skis, let alone.
They've become, when someone says to Google something, when anyone attaches a camera to a motorbike or a surfboard or something, it's regardless of whether it's a GoPro or not, they've attached a GoPro.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That they've become that synonymous with that small sort of rectangular little format.
Yeah.
But unfortunately,
writing with Miviro, it's do you think they've been done out of the market by the, I think I saw in Maplin's once they were selling something, it was about 50 quid, but the big advertisement says fits all GoPro accessories. So
they've just been done by competition, haven't they?
Yeah.
They were at one time, they were the only people doing what they were doing. And it happens in all markets, and that people come along and, make something similar and chip away at the market, and it's whether GoPro then can innovate enough to offer something different. And I don't know whether they have done enough of it.
So they had quite a massive effect on the sports filming market, didn't they? Where they all of a sudden you were right in amongst the action, because they could mount these things on your chest, on your arm, on your helmet, whatever, and it seemed to bring TV sports action up to a much higher level. Because I think they were quite quickly approved by the BBC, weren't they? And they got allowed to be used for sporting work.
The best thing I did with a GoPro is I put it in the bottom of a coffee cup and poured coffee over it. And it gave quite a good...
I prefer sugar myself, David. I'm not going that far,
Do you not melt the GoPro?
I've still got the GoPro. Coffee, but it was quite a clever way of doing it. But after a while, I tired of my GoPro and didn't really. I found it very fiddly to get all the. You have to use the buttons so many in certain sequences to set it all up. Whether they're better now, I don't know. But technology is just.
Have they also been outdone by these? These Osmos, is it Osmo? A lot of these vloggers were potentially, they were mounting a GoPro on a stick. Now they're using these Osmo things, whatever. Yeah. I don't know what I'm talking about, but they're using these little, I've seen people using them, and they're just on a stick, but they've got a built-in gimbal and Yeah.
Well, I've got the DJI gimbal for my phone, and it's got an adapter plate to stick the GoPro on, and that's really good. But now DJI have gone into, well, let's, you know, cut out the middleman and just put the camera and the gimbal straight on the stick. And again, they're pretty good. You see them an awful lot in the demonstrations and filming that we discussed in the past. But I'm intrigued to find out now, Damien, did you show this picture of your coffee as people were just about to drink their coffee around your house? Because I'm sure that would have led to some...
I've got it on my... I can do your next fade. I can send you the video clip.
Yeah, that's it. You got it. Please do send it through, and we can all have a look at Damien's coffee cup of delight. That'd be great. I think also you mentioned there, not just the stick, Ian, but phones themselves have become so much tougher. They're waterproof now, most of them are now. So you can do on your phone a lot of what you used to do with a GoPro. So they're sort of getting it attacked from all sides. So good luck to that with that. I said, but please go and have a look at the site. That one flight is actually very interesting.
It is excellent.
Right.
Enjoyed it.
Okay. If anyone's got any other news items they want us to look at and delve into and have a chat to, please send it through to us. We're quite happy to be magpies and grab from anyone or anything that is of interest. We'll have a look at it and we'll pass comment in our way. Okay, so let's have a look at gear that we've seen in the last few weeks. Okay, so we've been looking at new bits of kit in the news the last few weeks. Ian, you spotted a lens that you thought was quite interesting.
Yeah, Fuji have unveiled the XF50mm F1 lens, so super fast lens. Looking at £1,500, but this is an autofocus lens, so typically a lot of these really ultra fast lenses tend to be manual focus, I think, just because of the sheer lump of glass that they are and the cost involved. I think one of the cost savings is, you know, not implementing autofocus. So this has got autofocus in it. So a nice looking lens. It's going to set you back $1,500, I think, if you do want to get it. So it's not a cheap lens. But
what does that F1 give you, Ian? Why does that become special?
The amount of light that you're letting in. So huge amount of light. So if you're working in low level and also really, really shallow depth of field, to the point where actually it can become quite difficult to work with. Because, you know, if you focus on someone's eye, but you slightly move, I mean, the depth of field, you're talking centimetres, millimetres, depending on your distance to the subject. So,
right.
But it can, I mean, the Fuji show a video, and there's a picture in that video where one of the photographers who's had the opportunity to use it, has taken this picture of this, it looks like a soup bowl or something. It's got some saffron sitting on the top, and there's literally like one strand of like saffron in focus, and everything else is out of focus.
Yeah.
Such an incredibly shallow depth of field, but it does create a lovely effect. There's a street photographer in that video as well that's done some really nice street stuff, and he's one particular picture that sticks in mind is this person quite in the distance, but they're walking across this rainy street scene with an umbrella, and there's loads of other people about, but just by using that F1 they've managed to single out that person in terms of focus. So your eyes, although they're quite a small element in the frame, your eye is drawn to that person. And because it's raining, it's dark, you're able to shoot probably in that situation, you know, a street scene, you ain't got time to set a tripod up and stuff. You just, you see a moment and it's just boom, you need to capture it. So that's where the speed comes in. So it's just looking at, because Nikon recently announced their f.95 lens, and that's a manual lens. So if you have Fuji are pushing the boat out with their autofocus, so
right. Excellent.
Takes over the camera body. It's a big chunky lens.
Oh, yeah. I don't know what the weight of it was actually, but it won't be light since there's a lot of glass involved.
Yeah, there's a picture there which shows it mounted on the camera, and
it's got a 77 mil filter thread, so it's a big old front element for what's a 50 mil. I mean, yeah, 77 mil is not uncommon. You know, I mean, I've got a 24-70, which is an 82 mil lens, but then, you know, that's doing a lot more. It's 24-70. This is just a fixed 50 mil lens, so it's got a big.
But mounted on that Fuji film, was it an X-Pro 3? That just looks a big lens, doesn't it? It's quite a chunk.
I think in comparison, my 50 mil for my Canon, which is a 1.8, I think the filter thread on that is like 52 mil by comparison. So it's just, you know, dwarfs it in terms of size, but it looks like a nice bit of glass. And Fuji keep adding lenses, you know, that's the key as a photographer. If you want to invest in a particular brand, you know, you want to have the options in terms of lenses, and Fuji keep adding to that lineup, so they've got a nice lineup.
Right, okay. Yeah, so I've got some money to spare. That might be worthwhile investment. Right, okay. The other item, again, you've been busy looking at kit this week, Ian. You mentioned was this new Panasonic, what they described.
Yeah, Panasonic have unveiled the S5, which is a full-frame mirrorless camera, but it's quite compact. They're sort of saying it's like their entry level. I did. The photography show was a couple of years ago now, because we didn't have a show this year, did we, with everything going on. So I think it was last year.
Isn't there meant to be a virtual show coming up? I saw something about...
Yeah, there is in a couple of weeks' time, which I have registered for, actually, so I might see what it's about.
You could be our virtual reporter down there then, Ian.
Yeah. I did have, because at the time, the Panasonic S1 had just been released. And that was their sort of first foray into sort of full frame mirrorless. And that was, it was a lovely camera to hold, actually. It was quite a heavy lump, but it was and the electronic viewfinder on it, I thought was very good. So this is taking some points from the S1, and it's sort of their entry level into that market, into that full frame mirrorless market. I don't find it a particularly exciting piece of gear. I think it's Panasonic doing what they need to do. It's, you know, Canon have over Nikon now with their Z50, Canon with their R5 and their R, Fuji with their X-T4 and X-Pro1, whatever they're called. And so, you know, Panasonic are just making sure they've got that offering of entry level and higher end, because everyone else is doing it.
Yeah, just looking at some of the pictures on the website there, what they're showing. Damien, you've had a kind of hankering for Fuji for a while now, haven't you? You kind of were thinking, you said to us that you were thinking of buying a Fuji, or was asking?
Well, it's just that I was just reflecting. I mean, it'd be nice if I had $5,000 and then you could just change your models and move on. And it means it's a big thing. You'd have to sell all your old equipment and then use it to buy the new stuff and move on and that. And yes, I think I'll just stay a dreamer and stick with the Canon and quite happy taking the photographs. But if someone, if I won the pools, I'll go for the Fuji.
Okay. So any pools winners out there who fancies having the pool, come along. I'm sure he can do a nice review for you as well. Yeah. It talks about being a hybrid camera. I suppose they're trying to lump everything in there for photography, for video, for blogging. The whole works.
It's got a flippy screen. So if they're aiming it at, again, the vlogging market, like we've discussed so many times recently with what was the Sony one, the three digit one that they released recently.
Yes, and yeah.
We spoke about a Fuji one as well that was the same, you know, with the flippy screen and everything. So they're just, yeah, they're going for that vlogging market, which they seem to have to now.
I suppose, yeah, because their biggest competitor now in all of this is the camera phone. All of these manufacturers are fighting a battle against people taking photographs. And of course, the phones seem to be becoming so much more capable. Every time you look at a new phone, it can take a shot of the moon from 6 feet and all this kind of stuff. It's just phenomenal.
I mean, the phones are fantastic, but you just got to look at the compression they do on them and the playing around. I mean, you do still have a bit of quality. I look at I was posting some of my iPhone pictures up the other day and I watched that they were the compression that we're doing on them on a website, and I could see that there's a few things about the iPhone pictures that are not quite there yet, still give a marvelous picture.
Oh, yeah.
I was reading in the Amateur Photographer today about some add-ons for the iPhone, and they said, well, you could spend £90 and put these add-ons, but really now you don't need the add-ons, they said. The iPhone does what you need it. The only thing this add-on was giving you was a fisheye effect, and it won't be long before you'll get that fisheye effect. But what's going to happen to these, you know, for wildlife photographers, for the professional photographers, buying these pieces of kit just get astronomical as the phone consumes more and more of the regular stuff? It's just interesting to know where it's all going to go.
Yeah, very, very true, very true. Okay, let's move on from kit from this week to our discussion for tonight. Okay, guys, we're third part of the show. We're just going to have a general discussion, and what crept up in our conversations earlier on. And it was after looking at the pictures there from the National Geographic, especially the Maori one, was about travel and photography. And for most of us, for me, it's a chance to actually get the camera out, take it away on holiday and do some photographs. I'm usually too busy doing other stuff during the week to get out and take some photographs. And we mentioned, Damien, about you had the opportunity because you were in an almost photographic setting, weren't you, in the summer?
Yes, I thought I was going to be confined to a hotel. It was my daughter's wedding, and I wouldn't be able to get out much. And I'd done a bit of Google Earth mapping, and I thought, oh, it looked a bit boring where I was on COS. But when I got there, I could, much further from the truth, beautiful blue and white churches, lovely coastal lines, sleepy villages in the morning, sunrises, sunsets with the golden light. I mean, even when it was harsh sunlight in the middle of the day, you could still get a good picture out occasionally. So it was just lovely to have a new place to take photographs of. And I think that's what travel photography is all about. My daughter got married out there, so the venue was beautiful, and there was no light pollution, so you could see Saturn and the Jupiter and the moon. It was just perfect. It was just great. But I'm just thinking, I was probably one of the lucky ones, and also a very brave person to fly out there on one of the corridors with the present situation. And many people are not traveling, or they're doing UK-based travel and one of the things about going on holiday is bringing your camera with you and getting those holiday snaps. And I always love having my camera with me, taking pictures of the area, looking back and knowing what we got up to and that.
Yeah. You funny you mentioned that. Of course, Ian, your spot is a destination for people where you're living down in the southwest there, that people are coming down, I should imagine, their droves at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, Cornwall, almost, I think it was 4th of July, wasn't it, when they eased the restrictions. It literally, it was like a tap into the southwest. That weekend, the roads were gridlock, and it's been but as I say, the Cornwall needed it because we rely on the tourism, but it's ever since that 4th of July, it's been a bumper bumper summer. It's been really busy. But as someone who lives here, you accept it. We get to enjoy it the rest of the year, and you just know the places to avoid going. The honeypot locations where you can almost put your tripod in the same tripod marks as the the 12 other photographers that are there at the same time. So that's where you just try and find these little hidden gems. I'm doing a bit of a time lapse project, which is an area where tourists won't be going because they won't know it's there, and that's part of the appeal of it, and it's local, and I haven't got far to travel. I think it'd be interesting what it'll be like for travel photographers who rely on an income to go traveling around the world to take photographs, and what they're doing in this current situation. But I guess the good ones will be staying local and trying to find, not just putting the camera in a drawer, they'll be trying to find something.
They'll be creative. Mm. It's always interesting how you view. On my doorstep, I've got Stratford-upon-Avon, and I've got Warwick, and it's no difficulty just going along the canals. And I bite my tongue if I ever say I'm bored to take, if I really put my mind to it. There's so many places to take photographs. And I think you once said, this is my normal walk to work, the tin mine that you go past down there. Which one is it that you walk past?
Beaver's my closer one, yeah.
Yeah, and it's beautiful. And I suppose we always take for granted our own local beauty spots and forget, always yearn to go somewhere else to take the photographs.
Mm. Yeah, very true, very true. But there is... funny if I'm going to show a photograph here now. We're talking about photograph, but you've also got to bear in mind the risk factor. Now, this stupid couple, as you can see from here, there's a large section of the cliff. It's clearly shown. There's a big crack. It's about to fall away. And the girl is straddling the crack for her boyfriend to take a photograph. That's incredibly dangerous. As they were hauled away, the Coast Guard was saying to him, just her putting her feet on that huge, massive lump of, you see there, a huge, massive piece of cliff, could have unstabled it enough that it would have disappeared. And I remember we had this again previously, one of the previous shows, we showed some people hanging off of buildings in dangerous positions. Now, it's okay, it might be a thrill and all that, but that to me is pushing it too far. You've got to be careful what you're doing. You say when you were in Greece, I forgot we landed at Rhodes Airport, and as we were coming across the tarmac, I happened to see two jet fighters parked on the tarmac. And without thinking, I just grabbed the camera and started taking a couple of shots, forgetting it was a military airbase. And
it's the worst thing you do. There's no word in Greece for plane spotting or anything like that.
Nope. And I could, luckily no one saw me, but I could have been hauled away and,
It could have been, yes.
So, yeah, you've got to be careful what you do and where you go. I think the photo travel holiday is going to take a while to come back as well, because is it hard to justify it? Can you actually say, I want to do this?
That's a big market, actually, isn't it? I mean, I don't know how it's been affected, but, trips to Iceland and Norway and places like that, I mean, they do specific photo excursions, don't they? So I can imagine that market's been really hit hard of everything that's going on.
So question to both of you, if you are going on holiday, do you take large amounts of kit, or do you just try and pare it down to a minimum so you're not having to lug, because you've got to take all your other luggage as well? What do you kind of view when you went to Greece, Damon? How much kit did you take?
Well, I've been in this situation where my Sony, my little compact Sony, finally bit the dust after 2 years of excessive use, and that was a great travel camera. And I've been toying with having this middle of the road camera, but you know what? My iPhone has just ended up taking that gap. So the iPhone was really good for candid shots and taking pictures, and it does a really good job of most everyday stuff. I did bring my my Canon with me, and I also brought a telephoto lens, and that was mainly for pictures for the wedding for my daughter. But it also did really well when I was taking pictures of the sunset. There's a sunset taverna on the mountains in Kos at Zia, and I'm glad I had that camera with me, and also in, for the low light settings, it was very good. But I've never really, the iPhone now, I've ended up being, is a good travel camera. So I just, yes, I'm still yearning after something that I might take her away that's a little bit, I always think I'm going to buy something that's going to fit that straddle in between a high-end camera and the iPhone. But I've been thinking about it for the last 9 months and I haven't even got around to doing anything about it because the iPhone's been so good.
Did you take a tripod?
No, not with the... Oh, I mean, you mentioned that about you and saying about... I have taken tripods before. I took a tripod out to Iceland when I was there. But Ewan tells the stories. Well, you tell the story, Martin, because he's...
Yeah, he was suggesting that really... buy a cheap one when you're out there, bring a cheap one with you're going, and either leave it or sell it when you're at a place that saves you having to lug it all the way back if it's just for that one particular job. It's one different way of looking at it.
It is.
Ian, what about yourself? Do you end up
buying a kit? Or? Well, I was supposed to go to Disneyland sort of 2 weeks ago, and we made the decision a couple of months ago to move it to next year because we. At the time we had to quarantine and come back. A few days after we moved the holiday, they scrapped the quarantine, but then a few days before we were due to go away, they re-implemented it. So we feels like we made the right decision because we can't afford two weeks quarantine when we come back. So But I actually bought a lens for that very purpose. I recently got a 24-70 2.8 lens, and my plan Yeah, my plan was to take one body and that one lens, no tripod, no flash, because my thought, I didn't want to lug loads of gear around Disneyland. It was just going to be the one lens. 2.8 would give me good low light capability without, worrying about flash or tripod. So that was my thought process. And
professional photographer I meet on the canals, and I took my tripod along. He said, "What are you doing with a tripod?" And I said, "Well, just in case I get a good shot." He said, "Oh, I the cameras are too good these days." He said, "Unless you're doing low light shots, most of the time," he says, "a professional, I'd be just relying on the ISO."
I've got a slight other problem with that, and I can't keep my hands still. The lens will be all over. I'll never get a good photograph. So yeah.
No. There's what reason to have a tripod beyond stability, and that's just to slow you down.
Yeah. Make you think.
No, seriously, slow you down.
You said that.
Think about your composition, rather than just rushing around snapping away. Slow down.
That's a good point. Good point.
Yeah.
I think also, Ian, the thought of having two excitable kids with you in Disneyland, and you're trying to take photographs, and you're trying to lug a big bag and everything else, might be a smart move to have as little as possible. Yeah.
But I mean, I've also thought along the lines of Damo and a few. I was generally thinking Fuji at one stage. A Fuji, APS-C mirrorless small body with a little compact lens on it. That I was thinking about that at one stage, but I just thought, if I'm out walking and I haven't got a camera, I just use my iPhone. Why do I need another camera? Exactly what Damo was saying. Why do I need another camera in between my iPhone and my SLR? I couldn't justify it in my head. I wanted it, but I couldn't just. I just thought I'd use it a little bit, and then it would just sit in a bag somewhere.
And the fact that you could even switch over to video as well, which is great when you're at places like Disneyland, because it's not just the photograph, is it? It's the adventure and everything else that's going on.
With the iPhones can be quite useful for close-up shots, little candid shots, for little composition shots that you can do, which don't really demand a big camera. I mean, little street scenes in Greece worked out really well, and I was able to get some nice shots of the village and stuff. And they're quite good, and I can pass them around the family and stuff. And in fact, because they go on Instagram and people are not blowing them up or anything like that, they all think they're great shots. So it's when you start coming to print out the iPhone pictures that you really, I've never really printed out much of them, but I suspect that's where you've got to look to see what the quality is going to be like.
Yeah.
I think you'd be surprised. I've put, we do a monthly competition at my camera club, and they have to be up to A4 in size. And there was one particular month that I didn't have a shot for the theme that I'd taken with my SLR, but I had one for my phone, and I printed that. It came third place, and no one twigged it. No one twigged it was taken on my phone until I told everyone at the end of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd be surprised how big you can print. And that was at the time, that was just the iPhone 6, I think. It wasn't even.
Yeah.
It wasn't even, and that was eight megapixels at the time, so more than enough.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing, actually. The conversation really should be, how do you view photographs these days? The idea of, in the past, you used to send them off to bonus print, wait 5 days, get 24 pictures back with the little stickers on them saying what you've done wrong. And then you look at them once, fold them up, put them in a box, and, you might see them again 10 years later. You don't do that anymore. Now it's on screen, it's on, you're putting them into albums, in some cases, Instagramming them, if that's what you want to go. But yeah, it's a completely different way that we view photographs these days. So get everyone sit down. I'm going to show you the holiday photographs. Mm. Here we go. Well, an hour of boring photographs. Yeah, thanks very much, Martin. We really want to see this.
But you'll enjoy Disneyland. It's a great place for taking photographs. It's got so many opportunities, from just wandering around the shops to the performers in the streets and the expressions on the kids' faces and the stage shots with the various characters. It is just ready-made.
Next year, hopefully.
Yeah, memories are made of this.
Fingers crossed for you, fingers crossed.
Yeah, let's hope so, Okay, guys, interesting as ever, and a lot of good advice there for people trying to get some good shots of your photographs in your holidays. It's worth taking the camera. You and give yourself some, as you said, give yourself some time to do it. But of course, it's easier said than done when you've got three little kids all saying, pulling in all different directions and stuff like that. So, okay, guys, I'm just going to we just need to quickly mention our sponsor.
I'd like to say a quick mention to our sponsors, TSO Hosts, who provide all the services that we need to get these shows out to you all. They provide all the server bandwidth we need, as well as support for our systems. They're a great company to work with. I have my own site with them. And if you need anything to do with web, design, domain names, hosting, anything like that at all, please contact them. And if you mention BTN20, they'll even give you a big discount off your first orders. Our other main sponsor here is IMN Max here in Birmingham, who are able to service and repair and upgrade any Apple kit or Apple machines that you've got, and they can even provide some really good refurbished machines with excellent value for money, and they deal with any kind of problem. Actually, that's a nice bunch of guys. Just give them a ring if you have an issue, anything to do with your Macs, and I'm sure they can help you out.
Okay, well, interesting talking to you as usual, guys. We're going to be doing this on a fortnightly basis. We'll be trying to put the show together, and we'll be getting it out on a fortnightly basis over the next few weeks. We've got a little bit out of sync with trying to get the shows done up and posted, but let's move into a regular phase. So if you'd like to come on the show, if you're a photographer and you'd like to have a chat with us all and tell us your little tricks and secrets, or any questions, we're looking that we can try and do a Q&A session if you like. So if you've got any questions you'd like us to discuss, we'll find it an answer for you. Please send them through. Ian, where can we get hold of you?
IanLewisPhoto.co.uk.
Okay, great. And Damien?
You can do Damo on Twitter or Damo on Instagram.
Okay. And you'll find us all in the BTN Slack room, on the photo show or in the Slack room. So again, come along and tell us what you think. So thanks very much for watching in. Good night, guys.
Good night. Good night.
We'll see you all in a few weeks' time. Thanks very much. Good night.
Bye.
Cheers, bye.